Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. Patrick O'Dowd is back, and welcome to another edition of Bandwagon
Thank
Nerds.
Thank God that Patrick's back. I mean, really.
I am happy to be large.
Little O'Dowd is back as well.
Yeah,
little right. O'Dowd is back. He is always popping up in the background. He's gonna wave, lay his head on his shoulder. He's gonna
not talk.
Silence. It is important, but wave at Rick and Dave. But yeah, two show hiatus. I was basically Rick, from what I understand.
I'm the only one with attendance so far, which says something.
I know, it really does. I will say, you know, I feel like I had a pretty good reason. But yeah, welcome back, I'm happy to be back. Welcome to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Got a brief announcement, fellas.
Ooh.
Real quick, we are no longer running on Mondays. Greg DeMarco, in his infinite wisdom, has moved us over to Tuesdays. So this podcast, which is being recorded on a Sunday because I pulled back the curtain, will be dropping on Tuesdays now for the near future. I joked with Greg. It's kind of like I feel like our new television series, the ratings didn't do so well. So now we're going to move us to the death coffin corner of Friday nights at like 8:30. And he, of course, went, that is a perfectly Patrick O'Dowd response.
But probably pretty accurate.
I blame the World Series. I blame the Super Bowl. I blame NBA. I'm blaming all that stuff.
Yeah. Blame all the other factors, you know, and then we got to also, you know, tell ourselves that ratings don't matter. So
exactly. You
know, they're like wins and losses. It just doesn't matter, except if it's a real sport, but we're not going to get into that right now.
Right. So, thanks for covering, holding down the fort, Dave. That was, you were really the anchor of the show.
I tried,
for the last couple of weeks.
I tried. And I just wanted to congratulate Rick on Joe Burrow's landslide Heisman Trophy victory.
Thank you.
There was no question.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
And I'm not this Sunday, not next Sunday, but the 29th. I may or may not be in attendance for class because we are going to the LSU-Oklahoma game. So I don't know how inebriated.
Right.
That's an excuse. That's a valid excuse.
I can
2 hours away from me. 2 hours. So I got to go.
Now, I've actually been talking to Greg about this on days when Rick's not here and we bring Greg onto the show. And the idea that we've kind of run with is we're basically just going to title every episode Greg Has Questions. Yeah, we're gonna let Greg show up, and he's just gonna ask all his nerdy questions. So, but a lot to talk about. I titled this show "More Star Wars" because I really don't think there's any other way around it. This week is Star Wars week, and I, you know, as I wrote out our five bullet points, the first three in the length and the bulk of our show are going to be talking Star Wars. So I'm not going to go through introductions. If you guys don't know who Dave Ungar and Big Rick are at this point, then what are you doing?
Really?
What are you doing?
And if you other don't than know, listening thank you to for something listening else, to the show.
Right. If you don't know, we're going to spend some time. Dave, my fellow teacher, is going to work on Rick, who knows nothing and is the original bandwagon nerd. Welcome to the team. Heard you've been doing some rewatching. Is that true?
I was about to say, man, it's I want to say a week ago, I restarted all the Marvel movies minus the Incredible Hulk. It's not on Disney Plus, but we just finished Civil War before the show started. And for some reason, I'm starting to, I even texted Dave last week, a few questions about some stuff, but it's just amazing. I mean, you guys, it's second nature for you guys to pick up on stuff. But for me going back and rewatching it, it's like, oh, okay. And so I did want to ask one question before we get started.
Sure.
Is the at what point, and Dave, I don't know if I sent you this one, but at what point did y'all say, okay, well, we know Thanos is the guy, but the Infinity Stones, that's gonna play a huge factor somewhere down the line?
Yeah, you sent me this in separate questions.
Okay, because I'm starting to watch the movies like, all right, well, the Infinity Stone, this one was introduced here, this one, and now when they put the one in in Vision's head, that's when I said, okay, it's at least for me, if I wasn't watching it again, I think that's the point where I would have said, all right, something's going on with these Infinity Stones.
For me, for me, it was the second you see Thanos at the end of the Avengers' attack, because that storyline and that plot with Thanos is iconic. It is the first thing that most comic book fans are going to think of when they think of a major story involving Thanos. And so I remember reading, as terrible as they were, the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries. I like the visuals and I like the idea, but it's a terrible thing.
Now, has Thanos and the Infinity Stones always been connected as one?
Yeah. I mean, the Infinity Stone, first off, you didn't like the Infinity Gauntlet stories, Patrick?
I think I liked them when I first read them. As I've read them later, I don't think they're very well written. Like, I like the idea. I think that the scripting is not the best.
I can get behind the notion that the Infinity Gauntlet series kind of just gave like a rough idea of a story for them to use for the MCU. Yeah. And in that respect, it's a great story because it's like, okay, yeah, they use this. And they just kind of really added on to it, made it make sense. And they made it like it's very cosmic. I mean, that Infinity Gauntlet, totally. There's some, you got Eternals are involved. You got all this stuff going on.
The High Tribunal.
Yeah, like exactly. Whole thing. So it gets way out there, something you could not have possibly done in the MCU. But I agree with you. I think when Thanos showed up at the end of Avengers, you knew, okay, something's up with him. I don't think until they started mentioning Infinity Stones by name, I don't think I really made the connection that, I mean, I would say when I first saw Thanos, the first thing that didn't jump in my mind, it wasn't like automatic, oh, they're doing Infinity Gauntlet, because of how far out there that Infinity Gauntlet story was. But when the stone started showing up, he said, okay, they're going to go in this direction. And looking back on it now and comparing it all, yeah, it makes a lot of sense what they did.
Wasn't Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, because we just finished that one, wasn't that the one when they opened the globe? When the story was told with the multiple Infinity Stones,
Okay. Talking about really defining what they are,
and just like the inability for like normal people to, you know, hold the stones, and that's just one stone, and that, you know, what they pull off at the end of that is, so that's what made, you know, kind of put the end of Guardians 1 over the top. But yeah, I think at that point you start gathering the idea. Okay, Infinity Stones are involved, very powerful, very dangerous, volatile, and yeah, I think after Guardians, that's when you knew, okay, they're going in Infinity Gauntlet in that direction.
Right. And I want to say one more thing about it, because I forgot a lot of stuff at the end of Civil War when you find out who killed Stark's parents.
Right.
I popped. I stood up. I jumped off my couch. Like, oh my God. Like, it was the first time I saw that. So it's kind of fun going back and rewatching these.
Yeah. Remember last week we talked Winter Soldier on the World Cup of Marvel.
Yes.
And you and I'd mentioned that one of the big moments of that, it wasn't just the Avengers fighting each other, but it's that, you know, you're already emotionally drained by the time you get to the end. And then you get that big revelation. Oh shit. Yep. Winter Soldier is, you know, Bucky's the one who killed his parents. And it really, you know, it puts that movie even farther down, you know, as to why it got third place in the World Cup. Yeah. There's one of your reasons right there.
Right. So,
Patrick, there's something almost as cute as Baby Yoda on your right shoulder.
I know. I got, there's a lot going on in the background right now. Yes, that's Orange Kitty. He's our Halloween. Oh, sorry. Halloween Kitty. I don't know if y'all caught
is that. Baby Halloween Kitty?
His name is Halloween.
Halloween.
Oh, Halloween.
Okay. All right. So take Halloween upstairs. We're gonna talk. We're gonna use that to transition as the little O'Dowd showing.
See what I did there,
showing
Patrick
and Dave. See what I did. Yeah, it was very well, very nice. To jump into speaking of Baby Yoda, episode 6 is now dropped of The Mandalorian. We're coming to the end of this first season, and I gotta tell you guys, last few episodes been kind of bored. Been a little bored. And I'll tell you why. And I get why these episodes exist, because they're world building episodes, and kind of getting a lot of the characters that are going to be in play down the road involved. But it feels very much like I'm watching an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer where they're dealing with Monster of the Week. And that to me just kind of slows things down. You start off so hot with these three episodes, and now we're doing the side quests that like pop up on your screen in a video game that like, go check out this random star and don't do the main story for a little bit. And I really, don't mind those kind of episodes, but I haven't really felt the plot move forward the way I would with the overarching storyline. So not bad episodes, enjoyed them thoroughly. And the guest stars that are in episode 6, by the way, are like, it's awesome. So many great guest stars that pop up in that episode. But yeah, kind of slow to me. Kind of slow. I need them to put the foot back on the gas and start bringing some of these threads in. Make it matter.
Rick, are you all caught up with the series now?
We didn't watch the new one. We typically watch it on Mondays.
Oh, well, this is a perfect time to mention, Rick, no episode of Bandwagon Nerds is spoiler free. So that's right. Enjoy.
But we did, after Dave and I spoke last week, proper English, Dave and I.
Hey, it's all good.
He did say that this was the slowest one, and we went back and watched it. And it was, I'm already on the fence with Star Wars. And it really took everything I had to sit there and watch it. Because like you said, you're used to the action, you're used to the fighting. And then all of a sudden, for story development and character development, I think you have to play these out. It was hard for me to keep my attention span there. But I think as the movie's coming out soon, I think, what is there, one more episode left of this?
There's two.
Two, I think those two are going to be highly entertaining and highly full of action. But I think for character development, story development, these two were kind of necessary.
Yeah, and I agree with Rick. I've enjoyed them. I mean, I think like the sixth one, this latest one was that was a lot of fun. There was some peril. There was some kind of like, oh, the Mandalorian, what's the big deal about him? And then you kind of get to see, okay, this is why he's so badass. And what's this hatred of droids that you have and that sort of thing? Where does that come from? And, you know, you've got your obligatory Baby Yoda stuff going on, but Baby Yoda in peril again. They're kind of doing that every week.
Right.
But, I mean, I enjoyed the episodes. I tend to think Rick's right. These last couple ones should be a lot going on. You know, what Rick said, character development, foundational stuff. Yeah, these last few episodes have been very important in that respect. But you got two episodes left wedged. You got two episodes coming up. Both of them after episode 9 hits the theaters.
That is not true, sir. That is not true. The next episode is dropping on the 18th.
You're right. That's
it's dropping
right.
on Wednesday.
Okay.
So we're actually going to get it in front of episode 9.
We got one in front, then episode 9, then one after.
Exactly.
Guys, so the final Mandalorian is going to be released after the movie?
Yes.
Right. Which is fine because you're looking at timelines here. This happened before The Force Awakens. So really doesn't end.
So now let me ask you, Patrick.
Yeah.
That last episode, you think it's, I don't want to say imperative, but you think it would be smart? They did that for a reason, to watch the movie, then watch the final episode?
Right. They don't want to interfere with, they know that the fan base that's going to go see that movie is going to be spending a lot of their time seeing that movie. So drop it early. I mean, you can either drop it early or drop it late. It probably really doesn't matter in the grand scheme unless there's something significant that's going to pop up on this Wednesday episode. But, I mean, you think about it. You're going to have this episode drop on Wednesday. People are going to start seeing the movie. Like, my ticket is for the 19th at 10:30. So I'm going, you know, right after I finish. I'm in a bowling league. After I finish bowling, I'm going straight to the movie theater.
Yeah, and I've got Thursday as well.
Right, so... You know, I don't know that I'll get to The Mandalorian on Wednesday. We'll see how the evening goes because I've got a lot of holiday watching to do, too. I'm a big Christmas guy. And, so I think it's kind of smart for Disney. They're kind of it just feels like sort of making Star Wars the event this week is what they want to do. Don't want to touch that premiere in any way. And I'm not arguing that people are going to skip the premiere of episode 9 to watch an episode of The Mandalorian by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's more of a trying to kind of pace out the market a little bit.
So you don't think it's a timeline thing? Let's go look at my movie, go watch the movie, make it a weekend event.
I think if it's a timeline thing, it's going to be something that you're not even going to know watching The Mandalorian until you actually get to episode 9. Like maybe... But I think that's poor planning on their part. If you were going to really do something that was going to be a thread in episode 9, you probably drop it at episode 6 this past week so that people actually have an opportunity to digest it. Because like I said, not everybody's going to watch that episode prior to seeing episode 9.
True. Yeah, I don't see them making any big tie-ins between the two. I mean, I suppose it's possible because of the timeline. It is possible, but I don't see them going in that direction.
Right. So But to your point, I think that the one thing I will say that I've appreciated out of these last couple episodes, a lot of characters with connections and motivations to mess with the Mandalorian in the future. Like I was surprised, to say the least, that nobody died on the prison ship.
Yeah. He didn't like kill anybody.
However, you can see the ending coming a mile away, but the way that he got the comeuppance on the people trying to double cross him on his way out of that little base, yeah, out of that hangar.
X-Wings in the Mandalorian. I mean, it got an X-Wing sighting. Yep.
I love how casual they were about blowing everything up, too. They're like, yep,
there's a gunship
sure
there.
Look like, yep, we should take that out.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, let's take it out.
Right. So, so I'm looking forward to episode 7. I can't wait to see, hopefully I'll be able to check it out on Wednesday and keep up with us as we look at this and process these every weekend. Or, well, sorry, for you all, dear listener, it'll be on Tuesday. But for us, it's on Sunday.
Suffice it to say, next weekend will be a big weekend for the show.
It's going to be a busy weekend. Like, I just feel like we can't get enough Star Wars right now. It's just Star Wars.
We might even have to stretch next week's episode to 90 minutes, man. It's going to be big.
We're going to be processing the shit out of that movie, I can tell you that.
Rick, I want to ask you, did you make any progress on watching any of the Star Wars movies?
No.
Okay.
We'll get back to that.
In my defense, I don't know how much of an excuse you want to use this, but like in real school, I'm going to give you the excuse here. We got a new puppy. So I've been
busy.
That.
I saw that.
Did the dog eat your Blu-rays?
The dog ate she chewed up the HDMI cord and it was just a mess. I couldn't watch anything.
I could see that. All right. Well, let's talk about why I was gone. You guys want to do that?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about that.
Well, and I mean, you did a little excursion yourself.
Yeah, I did.
Not quite as great as my excursion.
Same company, different coast.
Right. So yeah. So the last 2 weeks I've been out because the O'Dowd family hopped on a plane, went down to Florida to Disney World, did a week long trip, and I was one of the first members of the general public that got to ride the brand new Rise of the Resistance ride at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in Hollywood Studios.
I'm wearing a Rise of the Resistance shirt just for you, Patrick.
I am wearing my Rise of the Resistance hat that I got on release day that the little O'Dowd is now treating like I am he's one of the game show model, like showing off the hat. So first of all, When does it open in California? Is what, January?
January 17th.
I'm going to say this as a fan, and I'm going to say this as a person who loves theme parks, that it was the best theme park ride I've ever ridden in my life.
And I said last week that I was hearing the same thing, and that's, very bold statement to make. I'll take over interviewing you for a second.
Yeah, Patrick. Sure.
Just because you're the one answering.
Right.
What about Rise of the Resistance makes it the greatest theme park ride of all time, in your opinion?
The level of immersion and the sheer size. And it's just so hard to describe this scope. So you were in a Star Wars story. Like, that's the whole concept of the ride, is that you are part of a Star Wars story.
Now, let me ask you this. Compared to Smuggler's Run, which is very immersive in its own right, you rode that?
No, this beats the shit out of Smuggler's Run.
Okay.
The little O'Dowd and I got to be pilots on the Millennium Falcon on Tuesday in Smuggler's Run, and that was super fun. And the thing that's crazy is that if Rise of the Resistance didn't exist, Smuggler's Run would be a perfect highlight ride.
Yep.
For the Millennium Falcon, and it's like, or for Galaxy's Edge. And they took that ride and they were like, no, we can do better. And then they created this thing. And so the whole concept of this ride is that you are a member of the Resistance at their hidden base on Batuu. And you are discovered. The base has been discovered by the First Order. And so they are trying to get transports off the planet to another Resistance base where General Organa is waiting. And so you get queued up into a room where you get a full-on real hologram of Daisy Ridley as Rey talking to you about the mission and what's going to happen. You are guided. Yeah, there's a BB-8 robot that rolls out. You are guided to this transport outside into what like a shuttle. There's a Mon Calamari pilot, lieutenant, I can't remember his name, that transport closes up, and you start to get the sensation that you're being lifted off the ground and being flown out to space. And as you are trying to escape, you're flanked by Poe Dameron and two X-Wings. And the First Order has arrived on planet as you are trying to escape. Poe's two co-pilots get blasted away. Poe has to peel off. You get pulled into a Star Destroyer's tractor beam. And the only thing that you know about this Star Destroyer is that Finn has infiltrated the Star Destroyer in some way because he was trying to get information to get back to the Resistance. So your transport gets pulled up, and then these doors open, and you walk out into an area with just rows on top of rows of animatronic stormtroopers, fully armed, staring you down with a big screen in front of you of windows. And we're talking huge windows of a space battle going on outside. And there are cast members, live cast members, who are walking you around and herding you up as Resistance prisoners to be interrogated by General Hux and Kylo Ren. They allow the people to they stay in character the whole time. They allow you to take photos throughout the whole thing, recognizing just how huge this experience is. Then they shuttle your prisoners off, and you get divided up into interrogation groups, which is basically your seating assignment on the next part of the ride. But you get shuttled into another room, and again, another big screen pops up, and Hux starts walking back and forth on this bridge and tries to interrogate you. Kylo Ren comes up, starts trying to, you know, use the Force. They get called away to the bridge, and then the wall cuts away as Resistance fighters have broken into your holding cell, have arranged a transport that's being piloted by a droid for you to get off of the Star Destroyer that you're trapped on. It's going to take you to an escape pod. So you all hop in, and then the rest of the ride is tearing through the bowels of an Imperial Star or a First Order Star Destroyer to get to escape. And you're zipped around hallways. We have full-size Imperial probe droids drop down. You get pulled up on a bridge at one point, and there is these beautiful, it's just so well done, animatronic General Hux and Kylo Ren, like, talking on the bridge. And that's when Kylo Ren discovers you, and you're being chased by Kylo Ren throughout the Star Destroyer, trying to avoid detection. You're caught by stormtroopers. At one point, you end up underneath Imperial walkers. Like, it drives you, and these things are like full on, full size Imperial walkers. And you're looking up over these things, and there's laser blasts going on all around you. You get pulled into the gunner bay at one point, and these giant blasters are firing out into the space battle you've been seeing over your head the whole time. It was crazy. At one point, Kylo Ren like jumps on top of the top of something that you've driven your transport into and is cutting a hole, and you see the lightsaber like drop down through the ceiling to cut a hole as he tries to get to it before you shake him off and get away. And eventually then you make it safely to your escape pod. And you're dropped down. And again, you know you don't really leave the ground, but the sensation of like being dropped, like there's a brief sudden drop in it, but the way they do it, it's just so well done. And then you're immediately given the sensation of like rocketing onto the next planet and being safe and escaping. The whole ride from beginning to end, from when I started to end, was about 10 to 15 minutes. Wow. Which that's is long. Yeah, which is the other part of it. And they never break character, even when it's clear that you're just being queued up and being held for something. Like the cast members that are dressed in the First Order gear, they won't talk to you. Or if they do talk to you, they threaten you. If you talk to them, they're going to tell you to be silent. Like, they do the whole deal. And it was like, I got emotional after I got off that ride, and was like, couldn't believe that like something like that could just have that kind of impact. It was amazing. It was just amazing.
I mean, I don't even know how to digest half of the stuff you just said. It's something that obviously you're going to have to experience yourself, because I'm sure, you know, describing it, you get a general idea of what they're doing, and, you know, because we go to Disneyland all the time. So I was like, okay, they're doing some elements of, like, it sounds like there's a little bit of Space Mountain, like a dark coaster or something like that in there, or is it all motion simulation?
It's not motion. You're in a vehicle that is driving you.
With, like, how many people?
It's like, it was like, I want to say six rows of five. So it's like 30 people or something like that.
Oh, so big people mover then.
But it doesn't feel big. Like, it's really interesting. Like, you're in there, but it doesn't feel huge. It's not really a coaster, but it's got, like, the, like you said, it's got these elements of a simulator. But it's not like one of those simulators. It's not like Star Tours where you're just in a box and the box is moving you around. Like, the box is really moving around.
What I've heard is that they incorporated four different ride systems. So there is some of Star Tours incorporated into this ride. I mean, the same tech, basically.
Right. I would say that would be like the beginning, when you're being sort of transported up. Cause you know, you're not really moving, but it's giving you the sensation of moving.
Right.
And some pieces like that, the coaster bit, like I would say the drop was akin to like the Hollywood Tower of Terror sort of drop.
That's what I heard.
So I just want to get this right, because the terminology y'all are using is, so instead of just sitting in this room where the thing is constantly moving, you're physically, this box that you're in is actually moving.
Yes. It's driving,
like,
you around.
How far, how big, like, would you say at half an acre, an acre? I mean, how far do you move?
I mean, it's hard to tell, because you're being, like, you're pulled in all sorts of different directions, like, but you're being driven through what looks like different hallways and corridors. You get, like I said, you get pulled under a couple of, like, huge hangar bays. Like, I took a video.
So this is a virtual reality hangar bay. I mean, these are physical hangar bays.
These are physically built. Okay. Imperial walkers that you are driven under, and you're like, whoa. Gotcha.
Yeah, they've got, Patrick, have you been on to Harry Potter World?
No, we just stayed on property the whole time that we were in Lando, and that was our first trip ever to the city. So,
like, this sounds like an expanded and probably improved upon version of, like, Harry Potter's Forbidden Castle or Forbidden Journey or something like that, where you go through all, I mean, the line queue is going all through Hogwarts, you know, and you're going through everything.
Same sort of deal.
And they've got, you know, they've got holograms of the three main characters, Ron, Hermione, and Harry, of course. And I mean, they bring you all, and then you get in this big carriage that takes you all over the place. I mean, it moves, but at the same time, you can see the background, like the visuals, and it's just everything that's being shown on screens that are embedded into the environment around you. So you're just completely immersed. So that's kind of what it sounds like to me on a grander scale.
Yeah, I would say that's a fairly accurate way to describe it. One of the other things I was really impressed with, and I'm glad you hit on it, is the line. So the line to get to the ride. So I got to the park. The park opened. They had a magic hour. And magic hours is when they open the park early for people who are park hopping or whatever. They had a magic hour from 7 to 8. The park actually officially opened at 8 a.m. So I got there at 7 a.m. They allowed people to park at Hollywood Studios at 4 a.m. to be able to start lining up, and they made the decision to open the park prior to 7 o'clock. I think they opened it around 6:30 or so. Now, the way that it works, and I'm assuming is the way that it'll work there, is they actually did a virtual queue. So you didn't have to go to the ride and stand in line to wait for the ride. What you did was, once you had scanned yourself into the park, for me, it was my Magic Band. Once you'd scanned your way into the park, you had to have the My Disney Experience app on, and you had to request to join a boarding group, and that group gave you a number, and they would send a push notification through the app to your phone to tell you when it was time to go to ride the ride. And it was the best thing that Disney could have done with that. I got in at 7 a.m. and got on my boarding group, I was boarding group number 60. They only had 200 groups for the day. I didn't get on the ride until 2:15. I don't think they made it to 200 that day. The ride did. I know the ride broke down at least once for some technical problem or another. Before, it took about an
before or after you were on it.
Before I was on it. So when I got on, it would tell you, like, now boarding groups 10 through 20. It was frozen on 10 through 20 for like an hour. But once it was going and was really moving, they were getting people through. And I was really impressed. For as much as people are going to complain about a new ride and things not working, I thought they were pretty darn efficient and getting people on and making sure people had, and they were very firm. Like there was no, there were no exceptions made. If you weren't in a boarding group, you did not ride the ride. There was no, I watched cast members turn away a couple people who were looking for like special line hopping because they had disabilities. And they were like, did you join a boarding group? Nope. Sorry. And that was the way it was, like, because they recognized how chaotic and popular this ride was going to be.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well, I can't imagine what it's going to be like on January 17th. But yeah, it is cool, like you're saying, Patrick. I mean, but for that ride existing, Smuggler's Run is just a tremendous ride. You know, I mean,
absolutely.
And like my wife and I, we did it. I got a gunner this time, and my wife and my son, they ended up being engineers. And she loved it, but it was too rough for her. And she said, that's right. Like Matterhorn rough, the way that thing swings around. And that, Rick, is mostly motion simulation. I mean, you're right in the cockpit, but a lot, I mean, it moves, but it's very right. Star Tours-like. But yeah, there's some animatronics on that ride in the waiting area that are like, holy crap, is that a real person? No, that's not a real person.
Right. The older and younger O'Dowd were not good co-pilots. We hit a lot of rocks. A lot of asteroids trying to get through.
Awesome.
But it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. So, yes, totally worth the experience. People go check it out. Disney knows what they're doing. And it's only going to go smoother as they work these out. I do know it's going to be crazy out there in California for you, Dave. But I also think that they're learning a lot from, you know, the drop in Orlando, the same way I think they did in Orlando from the drop of Smuggler's Run and opening Galaxy's Edge for Florida.
Yeah. And just, you know, out here in California, Disney California Adventure, they are building a land. It's like going to be Marvel Land. Essentially, they took out the whole place where it's a Bug's Life. And now they're putting in, you know, Tony Stark stuff. They're going to have
when is this going to open?
We're hoping 2020.
It's like, when am I going to California?
We were there. They were all working on it while we were there. But I think there's supposed to be a Spider-Man ride and something else going in there that's going to replace, like, It's a Bug's Life, which was a creepy ride in its own right. A creepy, because you sit in the theater and all this stuff goes on and these giant spiders drop from the ceiling on you. That's a lot of fun.
Well, I was telling Dave, we always wanted to go to a Disney park, but it's just so, what do we do? What package do we get? Where do we stay? Do we join a line? Do we join a group?
You know, I
think the Marvel Land would be a great opportunity for me to fly back to California.
Well, and here, out here, they took out, like, Patrick got to experience Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. That ride exists at Disney California Adventure, but now it's been completely redone, and it's the Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. And they actually took as great as Tower of Terror is, and my kids still prefer that over the new thing. I mean, Mission Breakout's even better. You got the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's got a great soundtrack. Shocking. Something involving the Guardians of the Galaxy has a great soundtrack, right?
Right.
And then they improved on the drops on the ride. It's fantastic. But yeah, I would say, you know, I think Disney World. Did you go to all four parks, Patrick?
Oh, yeah. We hit all four parks. Magic Kingdom twice. I obviously hit Hollywood Studios twice.
Yeah. And I mean, it sounds like a tremendous experience. I don't know, like, they're all different. The parks are all different.
So here's the thing, Rick, I think a lot of people, and I was like this too, I think people make that trip to Disney harder than it needs to be. It's an expensive trip. Like, you know, for us for a week, we chose to stay in the Fort Wilderness campground area, which was nice. We got a cabin. Cabin had a full-on kitchen. Had a bed for, you know, had a queen bed, had a couple bunk beds, for kids, and then an additional hidden bed. And we, you know, it cost around $6,000 for the trip, but
don't be Bruce Pritchard. Give us some numbers here.
Yeah. It cost over $6,000 for the trip.
Okay.
But within that trip, we were there, we did what was called a park hopper. So that gave us 6 days. With these magic bands where you could go to any park you wanted at any time.
Any park in that area.
Hold on.
In the Disney
Patrick,
World.
I got to ask you, just gave a number. Yeah. Were the theme park tickets, 6 day park hoppers at Disney World, had to be half that amount, close to it?
So somewhere in there, because you got it. Cause this whole trip, that number that I'm giving you was our lodging
Right.
It was the park hopper and the tickets to the park. It was a meal plan. And I would do the meal plan, and it was the photo, package. So with our magic band, any photo that one of their photographers took on the park, they scanned our magic band and we have that photo. The meal plan, what it does is it divides it out and you have different types of meals per person per day. And they give you so many of these meals, at least in the package that we did, we had stuff left over. Like, we didn't spend it all. We ended up taking so many snacks and cookies home because we would have what they call the quick service meal, which is like going to McDonald's and like ordering something off of a menu up there and they would give it to you. They had sit down dinners, like say you wanted to have dinner with like Cinderella or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a character dining thing. And then they had snacks, and snacks were like, that could be like a cup of coffee. That could be a cupcake. It could be like so many of these different things. We had so many snacks. We probably brought home half of Minnie Mouse's bake shop in our luggage. And we still had stuff left over. So it was really, for the experience that we got, I would say it was worth it. The other thing that we did is we also did the Magic Express. And what that does, is you tell them how many bags you want to have checked on the flight, and they're going to send you a special tag. You put that on your luggage. When you take it to the airline does their normal tag, but along with that Disney tag, it gets taken to Orlando and your luggage is waiting in your room when you get there. And then when you go back, they'll print out your boarding pass for your planes for you on property at the park. And they'll take your checked bags and they'll take them off to the plane for you, so you don't have to lug them around. All we had to do to go home was ride the bus back to the airport and check in.
Wow.
That's it.
That's it.
And so the customer service part of Disney World is amazing. And then they really allow you to dole it out. So we made our reservations prior to Thanksgiving of last year. So we had over a year to pay it off. We paid it off within a few months. And then about 90 days or so out, we got information about like about being able to like set up fast passes. And that was probably the hard part, is you got to do three fast passes a day at whatever park you were. And once you used those fast passes, you could then try to get more during the day. But it allowed you to say, oh, well, you know, we have to do the Haunted Mansion because everybody does it. You could book your fast pass for that. That's taken care of. And you didn't have to wait 70 minutes for that ride.
So you just walk right up and say fast pass, boom.
And you scan your magic band, and you have a different line, and you basically get shuttled up to the front. And it was great. It's a good experience. It just takes a little time. And we just kind of divided each day. Like with 6 days, we did a park a day, and then we had 2 days left over to kind of do whatever we wanted. Disney Springs, which is like their shopping Mecca.
Right.
My wife and my son went there when I went back to Hollywood Studios. But it just gave us some time and some flexibility, and really made it easy to manage.
So where did you book all this? When I say book all this, I mean, does Disney have a website where you book your flight, where you're staying, everything just mentioned?
We did it through a travel agent, like a friend of ours. Like there are travel agencies that'll do it for you. You can book it through Disney. You can't book your flight through Disney, but you can book your flight, then give Disney your flight information, like say when you're setting up the Magic Express, and then that's how you get your tags and all that fun stuff.
I would add on, or I would say this, been to Disney World once, been to Disneyland 30 times or more, because it's right here. You know, the one time as a Disney World, I can see where that would be a better, they seem to be very different experiences. You know, Disney World's got the four parks. I mean, Magic Kingdom and Disneyland, pretty comparable. Hollywood Studios and California Adventure, sort of comparable in certain areas. And then they've got these different experiences. Certainly, if you're like new, like you are, Rick, and you're going to do a Disney experience, I would, by all means, no disrespect to Disney World intended, I'd say go to Disneyland. It's going to be easier to manage, and you're going to get a great experience. And then from there, Disney World really adds on to that. But you can probably do Disneyland, because I'll let you stay here with me, Rick. I'll put you up on the couch.
Oh, you know, look at that.
You know, I love the big man. So, you know, that sort of thing. But
that's sweet.
But I mean, you could probably do a 2-day Disneyland, or even if you stretch it to 3 or 4 days out here, at airfare and all that stuff for maybe like, you know, $2,000-$3,000, something like that.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I mean,
so.
And if we do that, it's going to be when the Marvel park opens.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up before we're done to get an idea of when that opens. But yeah, I mean, Galaxy's Edge, we're going to be caught up with Florida in about a month.
So this exact same ride is going to be at Disneyland. Right.
They actually started building it out here first, and then they ran into all the problems out here. And then the Imagineers in Florida said, great, thank you guys for screwing up. We're going to take this. And then they pulled ahead and they said, we're going to open before you guys.
Now, how big was this, Patrick, the facility for this building?
For like Rise of the Resistance or Galaxy's Edge? So you don't know how big it is. You can't actually see how big it is from the park. Like while you're walking through the park, like, because all you can see is like the entrance and like a gun. And then it leads off into like, looks like it heads off into a mountain. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Okay.
But yeah. And that was the thing is, you know, while you're, even while you're in line, it's like you're walking through a Resistance hideout. You know, there's lockers and guns and stuff around. There's people talking over comms. Like, it's pretty fun. But we have I think we have exhausted a pretty good chunk of change talking about this ride. A+ on my part, especially if you're a Star Wars fan, check it out. But there's this other big event we've already talked about a little bit when we were talking about the Mandalorian. But things are happening on Thursday for most people, which I always think is interesting, that the death of the midnight showing, which I think is a good thing. But basically, I wonder when we're going to start just having Wednesday midnight showings so that people can go see movies on Thursdays. But Star Wars Episode 9 releases this week. And really the question, it's kind of a two-part question. What do we expect? And I think that's the real, I was looking at an article and I really wanted to, it was on io9.com. What are we afraid of? In terms of this movie, which is supposed to be a culmination of things. Rick, you go first. Or we'll go Dave first. It's Dave the fan.
Yeah. I mean, what am I expecting this week? I it's funny. After Last Jedi, my expectations are tempered, but I'm still kind of excited. You know, I
can't
want
believe it. You don't like Last Jedi. Man. It's so weird.
I'm gonna watch it again. I know, but you know, you didn't really dig The Force Awakens that much, and I like that more than you do. So,
because I don't want to see the same movie over and over again. That's what I'm afraid of, by the way. I know it's not going to be that. The imagery says it's not. And yet at the same time, I'm like, really? We thought the Emperor's not dead. Is he dead? Is he not dead? What's going on? Is he a Force ghost?
Right.
Who knows?
Foreskins.
Not foreskins.
Force ghost. Ghost. Okay. Not foreskins. Stop it.
But I say, should my expectations be swayed a little bit?
No, too? we're not talking star porn.
Yeah.
We're talking Star Wars.
But I mean, if he is a Force ghost, that opens up the whole, because up until then you've only thought only the good people get to be the Force ghosts. And then you would get to learn that, oh wait, the dark Jedis and the Sith and that sort of thing, they get to be Force ghosts as well. I mean, my expectations, I think they'll do a really good job with this thing. I think it'll be I would honestly say I think this will be the best of the 3 of 7, 8, and 9. And I really think that going into this, I think this movie is going to catch a lot of people by surprise, including me, whose expectations are cautiously optimistic, I would say is a good description of where I am on this thing. But I have a sneaking suspicion that they're going to knock this out of the park. I mean, JJ's the director on this one, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think having him back is going to give it a little different perspective than Last Jedi did. And I think that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting this to be the best of this trilogy. Now, will I say it's good enough to crack the best of all time? I'm not real optimistic about that. But I think this will be very much like Revenge of the Sith was, the last movie of that series of the trilogy. And I think this one's going to have the same effect. That's what I'm expecting.
I gotta say, if your bar is that the Revenge of the Sith was the best of the three prequel movies, that's not a high bar to leap.
I like that movie a lot, but
I mean, it's okay. It's got some. Oh my God.
But we were actually watching it yesterday, and that scene, and this is the problem with Hayden Christensen's acting and portrayal of Anakin. It's just like, you know, where he's got the two lightsabers at Dooku's head, and you know, Sidious is convincing
it's
him,
wrong.
You know, kill him now. And he's just like, reason I can't, it's wrong. And he cuts his head off. He's like, you know, the way he says it's just like,
shouldn't,
you know,
have done that.
He's like, you know, I shouldn't have done that. You know, just not, you know, appalled at the fact that you just violated one of the tenets of the Jedi code and cut a dude's head off. But you're like, yeah, you know, I shouldn't have done that. It's almost like he's saying, I shouldn't have farted in church, that sort of thing. You know,
It's very, my least favorite Hayden Christensen moment in that whole movie is when he's sitting there talking to Padme and I can't remember what it was, but she says something. He's like, no, it's because I'm so in love with you. And I'm like, you don't sound like you're in love with her at all. You sound like you are tolerating. You sound like you are 40 years into this marriage and just waiting for it to end. Like, that's,
put me
that's
out of my
what
misery.
Like. One of us die and move on. And wait, one of them did, and everything was better.
that's true.
But anyway, yeah, I'm excited for this movie. Obviously, you know, I bought the ticket. Bought the ticket to be amongst the first. But I guess my thing is that I've never been a particularly big fan of J.J. Abrams. I do think he's a little overrated. I think that
director or producer?
For this one?
No.
He's director, right?
He's director.
Okay. Did he do any Marvel movies?
No.
No.
But he's done, what has he done? Star Trek and the Force Awakens was him.
He's done Star Trek. He's done The Force Awakens. I think he's been a producer on both as well. Now,
why don't you like him? What about him or his what he does with these movies?
We talked about his storytelling theory for a while, and there's this TED talk that everybody really kind of looks at where he talks about this idea of keeping the audience going with this concept of something in a box, what's in the box. And the whole premise of the show is never revealing what's in the box. Like, you're always kind of giving clues and hints, but you're never actually getting there. And the problem that I find with his style, and this was true for Lost, in my opinion, a little less true for Star Trek. Star Trek, they were fine. But I saw it starting to happen right off the bat in the Star Wars movies. I feel like it's race parentage. It's this question of like, who's race family. But in Lost, it's always like, why are they really on the island? And that only goes so far before you need some sort of resolution as an audience. And it tends to drag out if you don't bring some level of resolution, because you have to kind of keep coming up with reasons to not reveal what's going on.
Right.
I also felt like, and this is very specific to The Force Awakens, not only was it a rebirth of A New Hope, which I don't like, and I've been yelled at by multiple Star Wars fans who are like, well, it's circular storytelling. I'm like, fuck that, it was dumb. The other problem I had with The Force Awakens was I felt like, and as a director or as writers, it really felt like we were trying so hard to tell fans, look, we're one of you two. We love Star Wars so much, and they had all these nods to the original trilogy that were just shoehorned in a way that did not feel like a part of a narrative. It felt very much like, oh, hey, remember that chessboard from the Millennium Falcon? Still works. We got it. Oh, hey, remember that little robot that ran away from Chewbacca? Still got it. Look at him go. And it just wasn't, to me, it wasn't authentic. It didn't feel authentic. I mean, I still gave the man my money. Like, I still bought the ticket. Right. Again, I bought the ticket and I own it on Blu-ray. So I, you know, shame on me, but I don't go out of my way to watch it. Like, I've gone out of my way to repeatedly watch The Last Jedi because I loved a lot of what Rian Johnson or whatever his name is. I love what he did in terms of changing the way we look at how the Force works in Star Wars. So anyway, that's my thing. Dave is on the other side of that fence.
Yes.
And that's fine. He doesn't like good movies. It's okay.
No. I don't like, here's what I don't like about The Last Jedi. And there's, I think I told you on a previous episode, there's like a thing on YouTube. It's a GIF. It's that clip of Hitler where he just goes off, where he's being told that the war is turning against him, but they've added in these Star Wars Last Jedi subtitles. And or just discussion. So he's speaking, he's cursing in German, but they're describing a lot of our feelings. And when I saw this video, it's like, that's exactly how I feel. It's like, you know, they just took all this great characterization and they kind of shit all over it. You take Luke Skywalker, the last Jedi, for God's sake, it's right there in the title, and you turn him into this, you know, overly emotional, insecure bitch who just ends up, you know, going out with kind of a whimper. I mean, what he does at the end is like beyond any sort of power that you ever imagined the Jedi could have. I can fucking physically project myself how many light years away?
and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it.
I mean, I am, but it's like, wow, okay, that's some mega superpower Jedi sort of stuff going on.
So that bothers you more than Leia Force pulling herself into a ship?
No, that was in The Last Jedi too. Yeah, no, I'm not.
That's the only thing about The Last Jedi. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake.
No, like, but here's the other problem. Like, here's the other problem with Last Jedi. And in this parody, they say, and they catch it, the whole thing with Finn and Rose, unnecessary. Added nothing to the story and just took...
It's a side plot.
It is, and it wasn't done very well. And I was just like, what the hell are we doing? Why can't we focus on Luke and Rey and what's going on with them? That's where that part of the story is great. But they just took some weird... And they always do that in Star Wars movies. You look back, there's always parallel tracks going on, you know?
Right.
You know, you've got Leia and Han and the Ewoks and the droids doing what they're doing in Jedi. Mm-hmm. And you got Luke's journey with Vader and his, you know, the redemption of the son and or the father in the middle. And then on the other side, you've got Lando and all those guys doing the space battle. I think they tried to deliberately copy that with Last Jedi and it just didn't work.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we will forever be at odds over The Last Jedi.
And that's okay. That's okay.
That's what makes this show fun. Rick, you even gonna make it? Are you still awake? Did we put the student?
Oh no, I'm here.
He's writing notes. I love Susie and Rick forever. All that sort of stuff.
So Rick, when are you gonna actually see this movie? Like 2022, 2023? Is that when we're shooting for this?
No. So no spoiler podcast. So the more you and things like this, where I'm not familiar with, the more I can hear about it before going to see it, helps me out. So my stepdaughter, who loves Star Wars, I think she has another week left before Christmas break. She's coming in, and when she's down, every night we're going to watch a Star Wars movie.
Okay.
And then I'm going to get them in order. We're going to watch them in the order it needs to be watched. And when we finish,
that's the order I gave you, right, Rick? 4, 5, 6.
You're going to watch them by release date.
I'm going to watch them in the order I need timeline wise. Okay. So 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9. Yes. And then once we finish, then we're all three going to go see the... So I'm thinking maybe mid-January.
Okay. It'll still be in theaters. Yeah, that's easy. It'll make it funny.
You're going to see Jumanji on Christmas, though.
Are you?
I saw Jumanji yesterday.
How was it? As good as the first?
I like the first one better.
So the first one would be hard to beat. That was a pretty funny, pretty good movie.
I did enjoy the changes that the way that they altered this, but it kind of fell victim to the same thing that a lot of sequels do. There was no explain to kind of the changes as to how some of this stuff worked. It just was, and you had to kind of deal with it. But yeah, I enjoyed it. The Rock's great. It was fun to watch The Rock doing his best Danny DeVito. And that's about all I'll say about the movie. Cause it's entertaining. But Kevin Hart, I think, steals it. Cause he gets to be Danny Glover for most of the movie. And he nails that cadence and that talking style. It's great. So
I know, but I want to ask you guys one question before we continue.
Sure.
And I wrote this down on my notes. Cause I want to, when Disney took over Star Wars, when Disney took over Marvel, I want to get both you guys' opinion on that. Were you excited? Were you skeptical? Were you worried? I mean, at what direction did you think Disney was going to take these franchises?
I wasn't sure what the autonomy would be that would be given to the people that were going to be actually making the films. I think that Marvel has been wildly successful because of a guy by the name of Kevin Feige. I think that's how, or is it Feige? I don't know. Again, these weird last names. He's the producer. He's the guy who has overseen the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and he has been given the latitude to continue to build and allow it to be creative. I think that's what they're trying to do with Star Wars, with J.J. Abrams. I don't think it's been nearly as successful. I think it's a harder fan base too, oddly enough. that Star Wars fan, even though there's an overlap, there's a level of passion to Star Wars fans. It's almost a little caustic at times when things don't meet expectations that I don't see nearly as much with Marvel. And I think it's because Marvel's really just been able to just introduce everything. Like, it's a new concept, it seems like, or new characters, right, and all these things outside
of, start from scratch, so to speak.
Very much so. And I think that Disney has had to deal with the George Lucas mythos. And for as much as people complain about how much George tinkered with his movies, I think we learned a lot out of The Last Jedi, that there are a lot of fans that said they wanted something new and something different. And then that was a little too different and a little too new for a group. And that's why it's been such a polarizing movie, is because you've got these two camps that really have seen things differently.
Yeah, you got the two camps sitting right here. Right. But hey, so getting back to your question, Rick, which was, you know, my thought when Disney got this, Disney's one of those companies that I don't worry about, because, and it's probably because I've been dealing with them for so long through Disneyland. I mean, everybody who I've ever been involved with, my kids, my wife, so many of them, and we're only 2.5 hours. I think we made it back from Anaheim in like 2 hours Tuesday night, which was shocking to me in the middle of a nasty fog, but that's not the point. The point is, we've spent so much time at Disneyland and being involved with Disney that they're one of those companies I didn't worry about. And I thought, you know, Disney acquiring Marvel, acquiring Star Wars, that's pretty good. Like, how did you feel when you thought, when you heard Disney acquired Fox? I mean, the first thing that jumped to my mind was Fantastic Four, X-Men. Get them all under one umbrella with, like, you know, it's usually not a good idea to really kind of box out your competition like they are. But at the same time, Disney just doesn't do stuff wrong. And it's like, okay, well, if Disney's in charge, I'm not really worried about it.
At what point in the MCU did Disney take over? Was it at the very beginning, or was it?
No,
it was around, was it Age of Ultron? Maybe a little after that?
Okay.
I'd have to go look. Sure. I'd have to go jump on, and I'm sure one of our loyal listeners will tell us, like both of them.
I'm not sure when Disney got that, but I did find out, Rick, that Avengers Campus, that's what they're calling the place in Disney, DCA. Avengers Campus theme park is opening this summer.
Wow. 2020.
Summer 2020. Avengers Campus
that's
opening.
That's pretty boss.
Now, let me ask rapid fire real quick so we can move on. Has Disney exceeded your expectations on Marvel? Obviously, yeah, but on Star Wars?
1,000% for Marvel, yeah.
I mean, yes and no. I don't think they've tinkered with the formula too much, and I think
which is why it's worked.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's the thing. They didn't get involved and say, "Hey, let's reinvent the wheel." Disney just said, "Are we making money? We're making money off it." Yeah, leave them alone. That sort of thing. And I think they've done this. They're going to do the same thing with Star Wars. I mean, they added and they saw what they had, and they said, "Hey, look, we've got two of the biggest franchises in the history of human history." Right here with the MCU and Star Wars. And then, oh, by the way, we're Disney, so we're probably the biggest franchise in human history. Put them all under one. Hey, let's stream them all on this service and add our own original content. I think Disney's been fantastic for both entities. I mean, without Disney Plus, you don't have The Mandalorian and that sort of thing. Or all these Marvel shows that they're talking about doing. You would never have that without Disney.
Cool. So, I know we could talk Star Wars till the cows come home. We're hitting our hour point. I do want to talk very, very briefly about something not having to do with Star Wars. A couple of trailers dropped while I was gone. One that I'm more excited about than others, and I think Dave is actually the opposite on this one as well, just based on some conversations we had. But we got our first look at Wonder Woman 1984. And we also got our first teaser for the new Ghostbusters movie. I'll start with you, Dave. Tell me what you thought of, we'll start with Wonder Woman. Just give me your first impressions of Wonder Woman 1984 and that trailer.
Super excited. Loved what I saw in the trailer. You know, she looks even more badass than she did in the first one. They've kind of tweaked her color scheme a little bit, made her a little bit brighter, which is good. Yep. I mean, if you're going to do this 1984 thing, Now, of course, the biggest question is Steve Trevor's alive, and he's very prevalent in the trailer. So, no, they're not holding that, you know, they're not holding that card back and saying, you know, the rumor is that Steve's alive, is he? Well, they're getting it right out of the way. Yeah, he's alive.
Yep.
You're going to have to figure out how he you know, how he survived the plane crash and how he's here in 1984 and he hasn't aged.
And not aged.
And he's Captain America, you know, that sort of thing. So, right. But the movie looks great. I have a feeling it has something to do with ice, Patrick. I'm just saying, man.
Man, don't get me started on why I get annoyed with the new DCU movies. We could talk about Underwater Thor too, if you'd like.
Well, yeah, you're I understand your opinion on Aquaman, but I think it looks like a really solid movie. The first one was so good that I have nothing but high hopes for this one. Ghostbusters 3 is probably, it's Ghostbusters Afterlife, but we're all calling it Ghostbusters 3. That looks really cool, especially after I asked Patrick. I said, you know, I'm in as long as they get some of the surviving members in this thing. And you had indicated they're all going to be in it. And I'm like, all right, then I'm sold. It's
from what I understand, they're involved. Yes.
Yeah. It's fascinating concept. Many years later, there's some farm in the middle of nowhere where the Ghostbusters mobile has been, and proton packs and all this other stuff going on. Kids are finding it. You're getting all these paranormal stuff happening in places where there's no tectonic plates. It looks very promising.
So let me tell you what I've done, what I've tried to do with this trailer. And I haven't been able to time it right yet. Cause I'm, you know, 40 and don't know how to handle, I don't know, even YouTube. I know we got a birthday tomorrow. So we'll talk about that too. Old man Ungar. Yeah,
thanks, my man. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm here for you. So one of the kids is related to a member of the original Ghostbusters, and I think it's Spangler. I think it's Egon's kid. There's a clip in the trailer where there's a closet with old Ghostbusters uniforms hanging, and you can see the name, but I haven't been able to slow it down enough to see if you can actually read the name on the jumpsuit. But I am all in on this. I didn't hate the remake that they did with the women. I didn't love it, but like I wasn't offended by it or bothered by it. It was harmless for what it was.
Ghostbusters. That was the problem. They tried to make it Ghostbusters and it wasn't, but go ahead. Right. I'm sorry.
I know. Get off your lawn. This is directly connected to those movies. It is a direct sequel. And I mean, you got Jason Reitman doing this movie. You know, Dan Aykroyd's involved, and you know that he's always been very, very passionate about it. He's been the driving force behind Ghostbusters from its inception. I'm looking forward to this movie. I'm very intrigued to see what this does. Wonder Woman. I'm going to go back to a word I use all the time when I talk about comic book movies, guys. Fun. Looks like it's fun. I need fun. You can be serious and you can have a lot of heavy,
right?
But damned if it's fun, and you're gonna have a winner.
I really think that DC is going to lighten up the tone moving forward. Their movies are going
to
be
have to.
Shazam started that. I mean, I know you don't like Aquaman, but there is some fun levity in there in that movie.
I don't think. I want to walk back on the idea that I don't like Aquaman. I would just say that it is kind of like Wonder Woman, eerily similar to another Marvel property. Because Wonder Woman, like you made the joke. It's Captain America, except she's a woman. Like fights in a war, super soldier. Nobody wants her to fight.
Yeah.
For different reasons. You got a guy named Steve crashing into a water.
But let's be fair. Let's be fair. You are right. You were right about that. But in the comics, I think Wonder Woman, did she start before Captain America or did they start about the same time?
Yeah, but she was a bondage character, like all about S&M and stuff. If you, nice. No, I'm serious. You nice. Go look at the history.
I'm awake.
Go look up. Rick's homework assignment just changed and I didn't even have to give it. But no, the history behind the writer and the creator of Wonder Woman, he was very much into bondage, S&M. That her whole concept
sounds
and the way
like
that
kind
she
of guy,
anybody,
Rick.
The way her one weakness is being tied up by a man, like it's a whole submissive thing. Like there's a lot of literature out there about the history of Wonder Woman.
And now, what's her primary weapon? Tying up other people with her rope, her magical rope.
So That's a whole other show, that by is. The way. We like, there's a couple of good things. Yes.
Patrick, premium content. Premium content.
Right. Premium content. Someday we're going to have a
Patreon.com/thechairshot.
And make sure you are sending all your hate tweets to TheBigRick62.
All right. 60. So we're gonna wrap up with Rick's homework assignment, which we know he's not going to watch or do, but we're going to still give it to him. And here's the thing. As we've been working on this show, and we've been doing these things, and someday I want to do a whole episode just talking about guilty pleasures. Guilty pleasure, whether it's comic book films or sci-fi stuff. And so, Rick, I'm gonna give you the opportunity to look for two different movies. I'm only going to ask you to watch one, and so you can pick it. But my all-time favorite guilty pleasure sci-fi movie is Flash Gordon.
Not a guilty pleasure. That's a cult classic.
That is a terrible movie. You can call it a cult classic. It's a terrible movie.
I love that movie, man.
I've already watched Flash Gordon in Ted.
You will understand so much more about Flash Gordon if you actually watch
That's
Flash
true.
Gordon.
I thought we were talking Ted, about the coke hit Ted. I was like, I've seen that.
Dude, Ted will take on a whole new meaning for you after you watch Flash.
It completely changes the meaning.
I think Rick shows up to the next show with a Sam Jones t-shirt on. That's my prediction.
And let me explain. And there's a really nice documentary about Sam Jones, like where they found him and followed him and talked about his career. But no, for me, it was made in the wake of Star Wars, trying to find the next Star Wars movie. I think, was it directed by Dino De Laurentiis?
Yes.
I want to say.
Yes.
And has a soundtrack by my favorite rock band of all time, Queen.
Yes.
And has some of the most distinctive music. People know that shit. It's been played in commercials and is great stuff. The other option is a Marvel option. Okay. Again, I love this movie. It's terrible, but I remember when it came out and
I know what it is.
Do you?
I think so.
Punisher Warzone. Is the movie that Punisher Warzone, starring Ray Winstone, who would eventually move on to be one of the Warriors Three in the Thor trilogy. But Punisher Warzone, it's like, you know what? This concept is ridiculous and we're gonna buy in all the way.
I thought for sure you were gonna go with Howard the Duck, which I would say there is a guilty pleasure if ever there was one.
That is
everything full circle. Who directed Howard the Duck?
Oh, George Lucas.
There you go. See, everything is all interconnected, Rick. It's the circle of life.
When you said it was horrible, I just want to. I Googled it. Two things stuck out: 29% Rotten Tomatoes.
Yep.
And the budget was $35 million, and they only took in 10. So
for what? Flash
it's not
Gordon?
Just your opinion that it was horrible.
For Flash Gordon?
No, Warzone, Punisher.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I figure Flash Gordon had to do better than that. I mean, that was a pretty big movie at the time. Yeah, the thing about Flash Gordon is it's very cheesy. I agree.
So cheesy.
So cheesy, but it's so much fun. And, I mean, you got these...
Brian Blessed as the Hawkman.
Yeah, that's right.
So wait,
Timothy Dalton is Baron.
In 1980, that budget was $35 million.
And that was an obscene amount of money for the time.
For Flash Gordon?
That seems really high for 1980, but it did get 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, people love that movie. It is a guilty pleasure, but man, like my wife hates that movie. Doesn't get it at all. And a lot of people are like that, but there are a lot of people like Patrick and I who put that way high up on the pedestal.
Max von Sydow as Ming the Merciless. Timothy Dalton
as Baron
is in that movie.
I think I would have more fun watching Flash Gordon just because of the corniness.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it's a much better movie.
Here's my one thing that I'm going to tell you is my ultimate selling point on Punisher Warzone. At one point in the movie, the Punisher literally punches through a dude's face.
That is fun, but can't match Flash Gordon.
I don't know. We'll see. All right, dude. Fellas, I think that's a good place to wrap it up today. Why don't we start? Rick, why don't you tell everybody where to find you on the Twitter, the Facebook, the Face Chat, the Snapgram, all those things.
You forgot the InstaFace. But you can find me at TheBigRick62 on Twitter. We're about to put out a show next week. College football bowl predictions.
Oh, boy.
Next week.
Ooh, so only 41 of them.
It's eating up. Only 41. Hey,
I'm just excited that my college football team made a bowl this year. go Fighting Illini.
And I want to choose them just for you. We went 68% last year collectively. Nice. So we're hoping to top that. But yeah, at the Big Rick 62 on Twitter.
Rick, and, preview. Who wins the college foot? Who wins the CFP?
LSU, man. That's not just a homer pick, but I do have money on them from last year. So I would like to collect my $1,000.
Who do you fear? Who gives them the best challenge, if anybody?
Either Clemson or Ohio State. I just think Clemson's always that team that they don't play anybody, but when they get in the playoffs, they're blowing teams out left and right. Yeah. And Ohio State could just put up 50 points on you at any given time, just as LSU. But I think the media wants Ohio State, LSU. Joe Burrow came from Ohio State. Now he's playing against Ohio State. It's a media's dream.
My pick is the media is not going to get that. Clemson's going to take them down. But I do agree with you, LSU wins.
But I tell you, I wouldn't mind Clemson, LSU. Both Tigers, both call their home stadium Death Valley. Yeah. So that would be a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, there's not a bad matchup in the playoffs. Like, the four right teams got in my opinion.
I agree.
Yep.
Like, they did what they needed to do. All right, Dave, tell them where they can find you.
You can find me at Twitter on Twitter. We are at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG or Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression. We still need to come up with our own stuff for this show. We know. We know. We know.
You know, y'all need to make that my homework assignment next week.
Yeah.
Create a Twitter account for the show.
There you go. There you go. And of course, you can always find me on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. I am up to 454 followers.
Ooh.
Someday I will be at 500, maybe in 30 years.
And can I just say, your numbers started going up when the show started, Patrick. So
right. Well, you went up three since the show started.
Pick it up some nerds. That's always great. Good show, fellas. Thank you for taking some time. Looking forward to hearing how this drops on Tuesday. And folks, that's going to do it for us here at Bandwagon Nerds. Climb out of the basement and get a little sunshine in the meantime.
You heard the man. Talk to you guys next week.
Later.